Interesting speech by Arlene Foster at the Intercontinental Hotel in Dublin last night, in which some commentators are saying we're starting to see the DUP shift now on its position over Brexit. She suggested her party might consider supporting a Brexit deal if it included what she called Northern Ireland specific solutions. Now, what on earth would they be? Addressing the Dublin Chamber of Commerce, Mrs. Foster reiterated that a deal that involved an Irish backstop would not be achieved. She also held talks with the Taoiseach, Leo Varadkar. She was speaking to reporters beforehand, and she was asked whether it was possible to have Northern Ireland-only solutions to the Brexit border issue that did not affect its constitutional position.
In terms of the European leaders, of course, we are in a negotiation. One would expect them to be negotiating from a strong point of view. But what we want to see is a sensible deal that works for us in Northern Ireland, of course, one that works for our colleagues and our neighbours down here in the Republic of Ireland as well, but one that works for the UK constitutional position as well. That's very important, and one I hope that the European Union will respect.
Have you seen any proposals on this yet that you can agree
to? I mean, obviously we're in ongoing talks with our own government. Our own government is negotiating with the Europeans. Obviously that's the proper fashion and that should be the way it happens. And we'll continue to talk. I think it's important that there's an understanding of our position as there is an understanding of the Nationalist position as well.
Are DUP voters fully behind you on this position? Or
yes.
Have you heard every DUP voter?
Because I don't speak to all 300,000 every day,
Have you received any representations from your base, perhaps expressing concern about where this is all headed?
Well, look, everybody wants to see a deal happening. I mean, I think the sort of presentation that the DUP is a no-deal party is wrong, and I think people get very alarmed when they hear that sort of rhetoric. We do want to see a deal, but it has to be a deal that works for everybody.
Last time you were here, we outside St Patrick's Cathedral.
That's right.
That's right. The question was, Northern Ireland has been offered the best of both worlds at the time, and you said no.
No, they weren't.
What specifically are you looking for? Because now the focus seems to be on the Northern Ireland separate from the rest of GB. What exactly are you looking for that wasn't on offer last time?
Well, I don't think that's right, Shane, in terms of I'm looking for something to separate Northern Ireland from the rest of GB.
No,
I think that language is rather pejorative. What I want to see is Northern Ireland very firmly being with the rest of GB, particularly in and around customs and the single market, because, of course, the UK single market is our most important single market. 73% of goods that leave the Port of Belfast go to GB, and it would be madness to have any sort of barriers between us and Great Britain. But we do recognise that we are on an island, as I've said. We recognise the unique history and geography of the place where we live, and I'm down here to celebrate a bit of that tonight.
Let's speak to the commentators, Alex Kane and Mick Fielty. Good morning, Alex.
Morning.
Morning, Mick.
Hi, Stephen.
Good morning. Alex, are they shifting ground? Is the DUP doing any type of laying of the ground here to shift?
Well, I would be careful about using the term shift, because as you know, I've always said that right from the beginning, right, going back to the even slightly before the backstop in 2017, I've always said that my opinion was that the DUP did not want a no-deal scenario. They knew that the conditions and the consequences of that could be very difficult for them. And also, if you look at the Foster-McGuinness letter of July 2016, which has now been referenced in the past few days by Ireland herself and by Geoffrey Donaldson, where Mark McGuinness and Arlene Foster wrote a joint letter to Theresa May, talked about they would work together, talked about the part that the Assembly would play, been assured by the Prime Minister that they collectively would be involved in talks with the EU, in talks with the Irish government. If you look at the contents of that letter, DUP quite clear that there were very specific, unique, bespoke conditions in Northern Ireland and between Northern Ireland and the rest of Ireland, which would need to be addressed and accommodated. So that was all there from the very beginning. That all fell apart, as we know, after January 2017. Became even worse after the DUP did their confidence and supply arrangement and basically stopped talking to anybody else in Northern Ireland. What I think they've now accepted, that first of all, it's we know, Steve, whatever they will tell you publicly, we know privately, the DUP do not trust Boris Johnson to protect their interests. They don't want a no-deal crash-out, fallout, whatever you want to call it. They also don't want to end up in a situation, no deal, no assembly. This is wriggle room. This is the softening of language. We saw this, Stephen. I remember, 1998, Good Friday Agreement, one-way ticket to United Ireland, we'll bring it down, we'll destroy it. Within a couple of years, it started to soften the language, wriggle room, and we got the St Andrews Agreement. I think it's exactly the same thing. Now, so, the DUP are up for a deal of some sort. What it is in its specifics, I don't know yet, but they're ready for something.
My attention was drawn within Arlene Foster's speech last night, McFeely, to the following sentence, where she said, the concept that there could ever be customs duties falling due within the internal market of the United Kingdom following the departure from the European Union is one we could never support. I've actually lost my train of thought because that's not the right bit that I want to find. Let me get your view first of all, Mick, and I'll find the right bit. Sorry.
Look, I think the language is important.
I found it, Mick.
Go on.
We are clear, she says, that the UK, including Northern Ireland, must leave the EU customs union and the single market. Both the UK-wide and Northern Ireland-specific backstop were designed so that Northern Ireland would remain as part of the EU customs code. So in that part, she's very much saying what she's always said. That's hardball language there, isn't it? So no shift whatsoever there. And yet later on in the speech, and this is the bit that my attention was drawn to, she then says later on, there are some sectors of the economy in particular where the nature of the supply chains are significantly integrated, and we believe, with flexibility on all sides, that solutions can be found that will not, on the one hand, erect new barriers to trade within the UK, and this is the key part, while not damaging the integrity of the EU single market. Now, why would the DUP care, as Brexiteers, about damaging the integrity of the EU single market, Mick?
Well, because she's in Dublin, because this is a diplomatic mission on their part to try and create a better sense of where the DUP is coming from south of the border. It's been coming over the last couple of weeks. Geoffrey Donaldson has been more in evidence on RTE than he has for quite some time. So I think it's partly she's using diplomatic language, but she's also using the language of negotiation. The truth is that successful negotiators take account of the interests of the people on the other side. And the irreducible point on the EU side is it has to, at almost all costs, protect the single market. So she's recognising that. Now, that also, perhaps, set certain limitations on the kinds of Northern Ireland specific solutions that we can expect, because clearly, you know, lorries going out of Letchpatrick are just outside Strabane are delivering milk into Donegal. Now that's a primary agricultural product. Will it apply to more higher value products like butter, cheese, all the rest of it that is exported into Britain from the Republic? I don't know. But it's got her a lot of publicity. Without her actually announcing any specific solution at all, and that's in line with Boris Johnson's current mission, which is visibly absent from any concrete proposals. This is one of the things the European Union is complaining about, but I wouldn't be getting too excited yet until, and not least because that determination of the DUP to stay within the customs union runs against the UK Labour Party's position and runs against the interest of actually getting a majority in Westminster. And that's where the final solution will be dictated.
Have unionists anything to worry about in this, Alex?
Well, they will be concerned. If last week we had Sir Reg MP, Robin Swan, Jim Allister, who took a very considerable time to attack and deconstruct that 2016 letter and say that was the basis of you know, wishy-washy, unionism surrendering to the nationalist agenda. So, yes, there is a concern out there. There's a real concern out there, particularly after the backstop, the 2017, which the DUP hadn't been warned about, which they hadn't been able to brief their membership or their MLAs or anything. That really worried them. So there is still this a very clear sense within unionism, none of them trust Boris Johnson. And I think that their biggest fear, particularly for the DUP, of course, is that they could be called in, that Ireland could be called in one day with Boris and Jacob Rees-Mogg and all saying, look, this is what we are minded to do. can you live with this? And it may be something they cannot live with. Like it may, or Stephen, it may be something that they think no matter how it's dressed up, it looks like the backs up, it looks like it changes the constitutional position of Northern Ireland. Ireland can sell something. One thing is quite clear, and I've watched this through negotiation processes, you know, since I was in my mid-20s and so on, when there is a collective will on all sides, sometimes remarkable things can be done. And while it seems bizarre to say that now, yes, I can think of circumstances where the British government, Irish government, EU, Northern Ireland, so that could still somehow manage to produce a bespoke arrangement which doesn't undermine Northern Ireland's constitutional position. And Mick is right. That's what Arlene Foster... It took her a long time. That's the problem with all this, Stephen. It took her 2 bloody years to get round to having a conversation which was always inevitable, always predicted. But yes, this is a diplomatic manoeuvre. She's now, I think, for the first time ever, it's quite clear. Listen to the language of Nigel Dodds, so even Sammy Wilson, Geoffrey Donaldson, it is clear they have finally accepted they could have an enormous problem here unless they try and bring all the sides together. That's what she's doing, trying to do.
Could we have, McFeely, in your view, a situation where goods that are in Northern Ireland would have a different stamp on them than the rest of the UK? This whole notion of a UK-NI stamp. In other words, that they are goods that are compliant with EU regulations and they are different from goods in the rest of the UK. Because the optics around that, if that happened, would trouble unionists, Mick.
Well, it would if it was remotely possible. I don't see what I think people in Northern Ireland are missing is the Great Britain aspect of this. And you know, when Alex says if there is collective will around a given solution, great. The trouble is that Brexit referendum was 52-48, and everything that has occurred, including the general election of 2017, has showed that that split is deep and almost irresolvable. And that's the problem that we have, because there is no collective will in the United Kingdom. You know, you've got Scotland getting more and more convinced that it needs to remain. You've got Northern Ireland, where there is a small but settled Remain majority. You've got Britain, and you've got England, where it's as tight as 52-48. So all of this stuff, decisive action on any of this stuff, and radical action is very difficult. And that's why, in a sense, when you correctly look at the text and say there cannot be a customs union, well, that's the UK Labour Party's position, that it's impossible to resolve these issues unless everybody stays within inside the same tariff border. So, you know, I don't see that as possible. And the other thing, just to finish the point, we're all playing on Brexit territory here. So in a sense, the DUP have the wider comfort zone is if this does end in Brexit, and for me, it's not entirely clear that it will, if it does end in Brexit, that's their win. They've won. The fight over whether Northern Ireland backstop stays or not, that's a secondary issue. I cannot see a sovereign country giving up the kinds of powers that the backstop kind of implies, even though Mrs. May, it was in Mrs. May's plan, she failed to get it through the sovereign parliament. And that is going to be an issue that isn't going to go away, and it will not fall simply to the DUP. The mainstream parties in Britain really don't want it to happen.
And if the DUP were to embrace some elements, Alex Keane, of the backstop and say that it was with their permission, that's where this comes into the permission of a future assembly. In other words, their permission and the other parties, obviously, in Northern Ireland, would a voluntary backstop be any more palatable to people in Northern Ireland who are unionists, Alex?
A lot depends on how it's sold, Mick. The difficulty with the original backstop, first of all, it came out of nowhere. The DUP hadn't been, having propped up the government for 6 months, they had no idea this was coming, and it worried them. And the language, it was quite clear from the union, the immediate DUP interpretation of that was that while Northern Ireland, like other devolved areas, has differences in legislation and some issues between the four parts are not always in line on certain issues. But in this particular issue, the one interpretation, the malign DUP interpretation of this was that Northern Ireland could be treated constitutionally different. It would no longer, whatever else was happening, when it came to a Brexit solution with a backstop, Northern Ireland would be out of step with Scotland and Wales. That was an enormous problem for them. Whether there's a softer version, a voluntary version of that, I don't know. It strikes me that the DUP and Boris and all are trying to look for this, because the DUP needs some sort of sell. And just a fixed point, you know, that the DUP, if there is a Brexit deal, they can market that as some sort of victory. That's not the sense I get. I talk to the DUP quite a lot. I'm very good contacts with it. They are concerned, just in the sense it's a demographics concern, and it's polls about border polls and how things would go. But they are concerned about what could possibly happen. Some things you can control in debate and something like that. Some things you can't. They do not know what's going to happen. Oh. But it's important to say this, mate. The DUP really, whatever, and I've said this today, they really do not want the situation where basically there is no Brexit deal that makes sense to them, and also there's no assembly. That is very, very difficult for them to cope with.
I'll read this to you that the TV had just released, Jim Allister from the TV. He has said, any All-Ireland arrangement necessitates regulatory alignment with EU rules for this part of the UK within the affected sector. That makes Northern Ireland a rule taker from Brussels and subjects us in those areas to the supremacy of the European Court of Justice. In short, he says, it would be the EU writ that would run, not the UK writ within that sector. Regulatory alignment is a two-sided thing. It equally requires checks on goods entering the zone to ensure compliance with EU single market rules. Thus, an Irish sea border for those goods is unavoidable, he says, Mick.
Well, look, you know, what does regulatory alignment mean? We're aligned to regulation in the US. We're aligned to regulation in China. If and only you want to sell stuff into that. There's a kind of a nonsense at the whole heart of the Brexit debate. And, you know, I don't want to be disrespectful towards Jim, but seriously, if there's going to be any kind of cross-border trade, if you want to sell something from Tyrone into Donegal, the stuff you're trying to sell has to be aligned in terms of the regulations that pertain in Donegal. End of story. It's a simple trade requirement. And, you know, there are people like Jim who take a very purist view of this. But, you know, the country would be very poor if it was to just suddenly ignore all those kind of regulations in a place where it wants to sell. You know, so in a sense, we're playing around with concepts of sovereignty that belong to the medieval age, not to the interconnected global age that we're in. And it's on a par with what Trump is now doing. You know, Jim and others would have pushed the whole idea that we could go under WTO rules. But the truth is, you know, Trump is now turning his attention to smashing up the WTO. So there's a certain kind of recklessness around some of this rhetoric that just ignores the lived reality of the just-in-time supply system that we live in, and it's politically satisfying, but it's a complete nonsense in reality.
Well, let's see what some of our listeners are saying this morning. Gareth, next morning, Gareth.
Good morning, Stephen. I like that term, politically satisfying, because that's exactly what has happened. The whole root of this problem was the invention of the term Irish Sea border, which was absolutely unnecessary. An Irish Sea border is not a constitutional border. And an Irish Sea border, potentially, as we have discussed before, could have given us extra opportunities in Northern Ireland. And boy, do we need extra opportunities in Northern Ireland in order for us to grow and to prosper and to stand on our own two feet a little bit more. It's a missed opportunity to not actually explore what other opportunities are out there. And it's an absolute disgrace. The DUP is letting everybody down in this process.
Well, horror, they're trying to find a deal and a way through this. So what has Arlene Foster said that's concerning you?
Well, what has concerned me? I mean, I'm from a unionist background myself. From day one, I have not seen how extra checks in the Irish Sea is an interruption to our constitutional position. What are extra checks in the Irish Sea? They are extra lorry lanes. They are extra warehouses. What normal person watches to see what lorry lanes we have at a port?
It's the optics of it. It's the optics of it. For some unionists, it's beyond optics. Is that the start of Northern Ireland being carved off as being different from the rest of the UK? And then how different does it become in the future?
But it's not a constitutional border, and we have the Good Friday Agreement to recognise everybody's aspirations, Stephen.
Well, the TV leader, Jim Allister, joining us now. What is there to worry about, Jim?
Well, I think there's quite a lot to worry about, arising primarily out of what seems to be the muddled thinking about this. This idea that you could simply have a single sector, be it agri-food, for example, and that you could align it with EU rules, and that's simple and that's straightforward, and there are no ramifications, is beyond a muddle. Because the reality is, when you talk about respecting the integrity of the EU single market and then translate that to the sector you're talking about, that means accepting, abiding by, aligning with the rules of the EU single market for that sector. That means, therefore, subjecting yourself in the governance of those rules to the European Court of Justice. It means, as I've said in my statement, that it's the EU writ, not the UK writ, that runs in respect of all those sectors. So that is a fundamental conflict with the notion of a one-nation Brexit, that we joined as one nation, we leave as one nation. That is leaving a part of Northern Ireland in that sector within the EU. And more than that, it inevitably also requires you to be affiliated with the EU's customs union. Because if you're selling agri-food goods into the EU, they're subject to colossal tariffs if you're a third country, up to 40%. If Northern Ireland is to sell tariff-free into the Irish Republic agri-food goods, then they're going to effectively be in the EU customs union, which means they can't at the same time be in the UK customs union. And both of those translate to checks and a border in the Irish Sea in order to protect both the EU single market and customs union from a flooding of goods unprotected into their market, and to protect the United Kingdom from Northern Ireland being used as a backdoor to flood its market with EU goods.
Arlene Foster has made it clear, in fact, she's used those words, we are clear that the United Kingdom, including Northern Ireland, must leave the EU customs union and the single market, she says.
Well, I'm saying you cannot do that effectively if you keep a sector subject to the EU single market rules and subject effectively to the EU customs union. Are you going to sell agri-food goods tariff-free as a third country into the EU if you aren't effectively part of the EU customs territory? That's the only way you can avoid the tariffs. How can you possibly sell and respect the integrity of the EU single market without being regulatory aligned with the EU rules in that sector?
What's wrong with being aligned with EU rules?
Divergence then comes in as the years go by.
What's wrong with being aligned with EU rules?
Well, let me deal with the point that Mick Silty made. He said anyone who wants to sell, of course, they have to align. Yes, that's a totally different issue. In an independent country, if you're a manufacturer who wants to sell your goods into America or Brazil or wherever, your goods must comply with their regulations. That's totally different from taking a whole sector, the agri-food sector or any other, and say this sector will have no barriers because this sector will regulatorily align with the EU rules. That makes you a rule taker from Brussels of everything that governs agriculture. So that is totally different from the notion of the independent country and its own traders aligning as they sell their goods on a one-by-one basis with the regulations of those they're selling them to.
Mick?
And also, of course, if we were aligned and if we were effectively part of the EU customs territory, we would be excluded from any trade deals on those sectors that the United Kingdom made anywhere else in the rest of the world.
Mick Fieldy?
I think I agree with Jim's last point, actually. And this is really, in a sense, what's driving the DUP. It's interesting that the business community in Northern Ireland don't see this as an issue. But in terms of what Mrs. Foster has said, And this is something I alluded to in my opening remarks. There are no specifics here. She has made a series of statements that don't stack up because there is no solution that joins up Northern Ireland-specific arrangements around agriculture and staying out with the European Customs Union. Those are two different things. And Mrs. Foster, neither Mrs. Foster nor Mr. Johnson are offering any solution to join any of those things up. So I understand where Jim's criticism is coming from, but it's a criticism of what remains an abstract position, or, if I could be slightly more pejorative, a non-position that's been laid out by Mrs. Foster last night in Dublin.
Can I ask you this, Alex? When we're talking about certain sectors, that this flexibility and recognition of all Ireland cooperation could apply to, what sectors would it not apply to? Let's turn the question on its head. You know, when Ireland says in this statement, there are some sectors of the economy in particular where the nature of the supply chains are significantly integrated, and she's talking about agri-food and things like that, what sectors is she not talking about?
Well, I genuinely don't know.
What would be ruled out? Is it everything?
Well, if you don't have the list of priorities, she's talked about agriculture, she's talked about electricity, they've talked about water, there are a few key things which existed, the links, whether there were formal links, you know, have existed between North and South, you know, long before the Good Friday Agreement. So I just want to, and certainly since the we both joined the then Common Market at the same time, you know, there were already existing links. She seems to be saying that we'll keep those going. But what she's leaving out, I don't know, and that's the problem. I think Mick sort of half hinted at it in the earlier answer, that once you start a negotiation, if that's where she's presently planning to go with this, let's talk, let's open the debate, let's talk to the Irish government, let's talk to the EU, then, yeah, some people might say, well, what about this area, Ireland? What about this? And that's when it becomes a totally different, because I don't know what areas she plans to exclude from this. And to be honest, Mick, Stephen, I'm not sure she does either at this point, because, as Mick said, at this stage, it's almost like a non-position she came up with yesterday. All she was saying is, we are now willing to look at this, that, and the other. But quite what she's willing to look at is still very unclear.
Alex, maybe you can stay there. Mick Fealty, thank you very much indeed. I want to ask you a follow-up question, Alex, in one moment after the news. And Jim Alistair, before you go this morning, is there anything for unionists in terms of the status of Northern Ireland to worry about within this?
Yes, there is, because if this necessitates, and I think what Aaron Foster is hinting at does necessitate alignment with the EU single market, and more particularly being part of the customs territory for that sector within the EU's customs union, that flies in the face of Article 6 of the Act of Union, which guarantees a common customs territory for the whole United Kingdom. So I think there are constitutional issues here. And, of course, they would become more important, because once you align and the rest of the United Kingdom diverges, then over time that becomes more and more significant, and you are more and more assimilated into the All-Ireland scenario and more divorced from the United Kingdom scenario. So I think there are constitutional implications.
OK. Jim Alistair, thank you very much indeed.